With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
TF3, and it's the first of the quarterfinals. Tonight, Adam and Dave were doing the live stream on TFR, so let's talk with Chris. Chris, welcome.
Good evening.
USA, US, where are you? Where are you?
I'm on the very tip of Florida, in Key West, as it's called.
Wow. You enjoying the time on the beach?
Yes, essentially, when it's not too hot, because it is absolutely roasting for the most part.
I'm sorry, did we drag you back to football?
No, there's a nice little, there's a brief siesta, I think is the word, in between, so you've managed to sandwich it in nicely.
Good, I'm glad of that. And of course, you're sort of recovering post Copa America now. I expect a video on YouTube fairly soon on that with Chris, but... Chris, let's get down to Euros, first of all. Portugal have just gone through on penalties against Poland. Enough of the alliteration. Let's get down to the game. Basically, Portugal fielded the side that I imagine most people would have put together at the beginning of the tournament, or certainly at the end of the last game, with Sanchez starting in midfield, Ronaldo maybe the sort of dropping deep, but definitely much more prominent striker position. And it seems like this Portugal team has got a bit more of a rhythm to it now.
It does. I think Sanchez has done a fantastic job of not only integrating himself into the team, but then also taking on the burden of dictating games and leading the ball forward. I also think there is a beautiful harmony between Sanchez and Carvalho, who... largely because of the position he plays, will not get as much credit, because it's the type of sweeper who just cleans things up, gives it back to the other players to move forward. But I think that's the takeaway from this game for me, is the harmony and the beauty between Carvalho and Sanchez, who are two very young players that I think have at least got long-term international futures, no matter what happens at club level.
Yeah, I agree. But I mean, essentially, they were also very key to this game, weren't they? And... you know, as much as people are sort of calling it a boring 1-1, I think that there are quite a few things to take away, especially for the side that went through. But brief word on Poland, because, you know, obviously that's a crash out of a tournament on penalties. They clearly identified what the issues were with Portugal, which is to get at the back line, get it to Lewandowski, because they're not going to be able to mark him in the same way as the other teams have. And I think tonight they're going to be a little bit disappointed with how they executed that, aren't they? Because Portugal, I think at times, were there for the taking.
They were. The defence, I think, will forever be the issue with Portugal in this tournament. Cedric is the one to kind of blame in terms of making a mistake at this point. Pepe is someone that we can list off a ream of instances of him making mistakes, yeah. And losing his head. This is the thing, every team in this tournament has a, so to speak, weakness that we identify when we do previews, when we all do this kind of thing. The glaring one for Portugal, I think in some ways relative to how strong the midfield and attack is, has to be that defence. Because Jose Font is a relative late bloomer, and as I said, there, Pepe is not the most composed at the best of times. Even the fact that during parts of this tournament, they've had to play... Vieirinha at fullback, and I think today they used Elisao, who for my money, is not a defender by trade, if I remember correctly, if I'm thinking of the right guy. He's actually more of a midfielder first, rather than a left back.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of gone through that Fabio Contrao timeline, if you will. Whether he did what Contrao did and watched reams and reams of DVDs of the best left backs in the world, we don't know. But he's certainly not a natural left back, I would say.
Yeah. And obviously, Chris, Poland have now crashed out of this tournament. You know, Lewandowski on one goal. I think he's been quite frustrated at this tournament, marked out of the tournament, essentially, by sides who sat deep and then just put a man on him. But, you know, tonight, I think we, early on, it felt as if Poland, you know, their game plan was coming to fruition. And it felt at one point like we would see more goals from Lewandowski, or at least from the space that he was creating. Poland disappointed to go out at this stage?
I think so. I mean, this was the curiosity with them to begin with. Were they just flat track bullies in their group, in their qualifying? Because they had Gibraltar in there. And that was certainly something, I think, that played a large part of Lewandowski's scoring being so high.
I think a lot of their players sound quite crude by name, but I think there's a lot of intricacies to that side, aren't there? I mean, you know, Krajovac in midfield and Blaszczykowski just outside him. You know, Piszczek's been fantastic during this tournament. Milik, I think, is, you know, a lot of people will probably have been familiar with him before the tournament, but he's definitely put himself on the next level during this tournament, for at least in terms of visibility. So there is something there for, I think, for them to take heart from.
The thing is, they're not unknown quantities. No. Obviously, Lewandowski is the star. I think that goes without saying, largely because of who he plays for. But the names you mentioned there, add in there Zielinski, who I think has come onto the scene slightly. Glick.
Of course.
Fabianski, Piszczek. Even to a lesser extent, Grzycki, who gives that team the balance down that left-hand side. The issue, what I was alluding to there, was they had, I think, the best goal difference in qualifying of all the teams. Mm. And Lewandowski himself had 13 of those. But 6 of those came against Gibraltar. And I think when you're trying to analyse these situations going into the tournament, that context helps, because on the one hand, you're saying, wow, that's an immense goal difference. They should do really well here. And in fairness, they have. The problem you've got is, can they break down teams with a bit of extra quality to them? And I just wasn't sure going into this tournament if Poland had that, because while their team was very balanced, it was very functional. I didn't know if it had the ability to adapt. And I think if we look at this tournament, the teams that are perhaps impressing the most, in the case of Italy, it's a team so well drilled that its tactic or its style is nigh impossible to actually stop and inhibit. Whereas those who aren't quite on that level of fluency yet, they need a little bit of a versatility to them and an ability to play somewhat different. Otherwise, they themselves come up into problems and troubles.
Mm. Well, Poland march on through with what seems like better structure, something where the players seem a bit happier in their shape. Should we talk about the penalties really quickly? Ronaldo taking the first one. Probably wishes he'd chosen to take the 5th in this one. But some great penalties in there again, Kristen.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing you said there yourself. You know, Ronaldo, he took the 5th one for Real Madrid in the Champions League, decided to take the 1st one this time. I do wonder if that was him actually
making a point,
being a little bit selfless and trying to set the team up on a good start, because it can so often be about momentum with penalty shootouts and the pressure switching from one side to another. There is, I guess, a beauty in saying that as Ronaldo takes the 1st, Quaresma takes the 5th, you have the two kind of golden boys of that sporting generation, who at one point the discussion was who was better, Ronaldo or Quaresma.
Seems quite clear to me. We don't even need to say his name.
Well, that's the thing. That was the debate that Manchester United famously had on their hands many years ago when they were trying to decide whether to sign Ronaldo or Quaresma, which one is better. And if I remember right, I'm trying to think of his name. He used to be the assistant Portuguese.
Carlos Queiroz.
Carlos Queiroz, thank you. He made the decision to go with Ronaldo, and the rest, as they say, is history.
And obviously Nani as well, who came in a
Again, I mean, that's the thing. there are those three prominent teams in Portugal. It's difficult to look past Sporting in terms of production to the national team because you have William Carvalho in there as well, who is a Sporting graduate. But I think in general, the penalties were very confident, very well put away. The standout for me personally was Sanchez's, because not only was it quality, it was just the way he seemed to manage the situation and the emotions, because he's got his first international goal to begin with. Again, is really walking in on new experiences with every passing day at this tournament and every time he takes to the field. And yet he had arguably, I think, the most self-assured of all the penalties, including Poland.
He absolutely smashed it.
Yeah, that was kind of my gut reaction when I saw it going, was that is a brilliant penalty.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, if, you know, we have Bayern fans listening, and any Bayern fans in general, I imagine they can't wait to see him put on their shirt, because already he's starting to look like something special. You obviously have to temper that with he is young, there is growth, there is peak and there is trough.
Yeah, obviously. But you'd also imagine that under a manager like Carlo Ancelotti, and within a side where, you know, technically they're fantastic, he will learn. Well, you really can't fail to learn a lot there, can you? And especially with such an almost family feeling around the club. But at the same time, such a big side. Portugal go through. Be interesting to see who they face in the next round. Oof, it's getting good now, Kristen. Obviously, they face one of Wales or Belgium. We'll talk about that in just a second. First, a little word on England. Chris, obviously, we had that in-depth discussion the other night about where England go immediately after the game. Have you heard anything since that you particularly want to add to that conversation?
Not drastically in the sense good. Of... The talk of Jurgen Klinsmann unsettles me slightly.
I mean, there are headlines that the players would like to go for someone who's not English. But I wonder if that's more because they've seen the options that are English and sort of gone, well, we can only really go for someone who's not English.
Yeah, I think for me, the debate is not nationality. It's not rooted in that. I think it genuinely has to be rooted in what their intention is. And I say that because... For me, the issue with Roy Hodgson in isolation, because I think there actually are a lot of permeating side issues that need to be taken care of. The fact that one of the selection panel described himself as not a football expert in Roy Hodgson's press conference unsettles me slightly. Relative to Hodgson, it was a defensive coach who said this month, in fact, in June, systems don't win you games, players win you games.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you look not at Italy. Italy, of course, have made that statement look a pathetic one. Even at club level, he is incredibly off trend and off what is the modern way of thinking.
Isn't that also just very unusual in the first place? Because it's sort of like, you sort of feel like turning around to him and saying, why are you putting these two things at a polar opposite? That they aren't. They're sort of, if anything, you're supposed to marry those two together and look at how best the individuals that they have become a team. And you'd argue, I mean, you'd really argue that's exactly where he failed with England.
Exactly. I think my other concern with him is as well that, and I talked to someone about this morning, he seems to needlessly break up what could be very good links, to borrow a FIFA analogy, if I can.
Chemistry,
when you build an ultimate team, the lines between the players, sorry, I'm not using technical terms, influences the overall chemistry of the team. In relation to the England team, it should be Harry Kane with Dele Alli off him. He played over 20 games like that for Spurs and recorded good statistics off the back of it. He even showed he could do it against Turkey. Yet for some reason, Roy Hodgson saw fit to name a three-man midfield with Wayne Rooney in there and Dele Alli on the right of that three. Those are the kind of decisions that you just left yourself wondering kind of, how has he come to that conclusion? And look, I appreciate he didn't want to give the press conference.
I mean, that was a bit of a ridiculous move overall. I mean, it really was a terrible piece of PR, however you look at it, and needless, essentially, wasn't it?
It was. It was very poorly run. I think this is the concern moving forward, though, is that seeing certain members of the press, I think Martin Ziegler was one, actually had a brief exchange with him on Twitter about it. The fact that some of the English press are championing Jurgen Klinsmann, because I see a lot of the same issues with him. Granted, he hasn't come out and specifically said, oh, this is all about the players, and not the system. I also see just very broad similarities between the two, and it was at the point where I said to Martin that actually if you swap out Roy Hodgson for Jurgen Klinsmann, the only thing you're getting is a change of accent rather than a change of intent and style.
That's
to me is a concern, because it makes me think that maybe other people are thinking that way too.
Yeah, I also think then that crosses over with the way that the FA have treated certain people and the way the press treat certain people. So Stephen Gerrard's article the other day, you forgive me, I can't remember which paper, but he was basically saying, you know, the players and the mentality, you can see how that's how the dynamic of that is wrong over a tournament, and so many players are worried about crashing out of a tournament and those sort of things, and how that can change, and how that's a cultural thing. And I think that there's often not enough nuance to the conversation, because a lot of people are busy, I think, like you said before we started the podcast, looking for one cause, and that's sort of becoming the one thing. But it definitely stifles creativity within the squad. And, you know, obviously the way that Sterling has been covered over the last few days seems sort of, if not borderline racist. And obviously, I also find it difficult because, you know, I think the Daily Mail's article where they just personally attack each of the players, Wayne Rooney for his hair, Wilshere for smoking, all these kind of things. I don't quite understand it. I don't quite get it. I don't get why you want to needle people in that way, apart from to sell clickbait.
I think the one objection I would say is that the Wilshere smoking one, I can kind of understand, because it relates to physical health.
And I understand that, and you know, that's fine, but don't put it in the same article as you know, Rooney and his hair, because I think that's a very personal issue in the first place, and one that is, you know, it's not really publicly relevant. They also put that information alongside the fact that he's broken up with his ex, who he has two kids with, and sort of, you know, now he's engaged someone else, and they're sort of like, oh, here's another reason that England crashed out, here's more reasons why. And you sort of think, well, again, not really, but, you know, you're drawing those lines, and now we can't unsee those lines, and that becomes problematic as well, I think.
It does. I think what you can say is that the likely publications that are putting those stories out are not known for running pieces that say, well, here are the tactical deficiencies that stopped England from progressing.
No, but the problem is, Chris, those sort of people do influence Brexit. So you'd sort of worry what people think, you know, if people take sort of notice on them, of them on serious issues, imagine what sort of public consciousness they can negotiate for themselves elsewhere.
And that's one of the issues. That's one of the myriad of issues that England as a nation has to sit down and say, okay, this is influencing the team. When you have the likes of Stephen Gerrard, who isn't involved in the setup anymore, telling you that when they concede a goal, their first thought is how people at home will react to this relative to the media, that is a concern. That means that you are putting too much of a negative spin on things, which is not to say pull back, but maybe reconsider how your coverage is dictated and with what.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kind of avenues you go to first.
I also think that goes down the route of, you know, sort of editorial. And I think editorial has very much changed. You know, it's very difficult not to sound like the good old days when you have this sort of a conversation. But I definitely think editorial lines have changed. And I think people, you know, it's very easy to go towards hyperbole on these sort of things. But And is hyperbole is also... what's weird, Chris, is I also believe that there are a lot of people who kind of rip off opinions and have begun to sort of have faux intellectual conversations, maybe like I might be perceived to sometimes. And this stuff almost becomes hyperbolic in the way that people construct it, doesn't it? Because, you know, everyone's sort of saying, well, there's areas of grey, and then we just agree on that, but no real conclusion is made. So I think we're all agreed it's Sterling's headlines that are the issue. It's not. Brexit, Gove, move on. But Chris, Ibrahimovic has landed.
He has. I did the rumour rate with TFR the other month,
I
and
bet
said,
you did, mate.
For me, it was a five Zlatans out of five, to use the traditional scale, if you will. It makes the most sense for him at this precise moment, I think. He's done the Spanish league, he's done the French league, he's done the Italian league. I don't think Germany would offer him what he wants to begin with. I think England not only can afford him financially, it then presents a chance to maybe even silence people that used to doubt him and have voiced those doubts on a fairly regular basis. So it makes a lot of sense, I think, for me. In terms of Manchester United, you know, there's talk, I think, that Mkhitaryan is next, that Pogba is potentially next. It's them kind of gaining their vitality back, I think. It's them gaining those big names that we so often associate with them.
Yes. I kind of agree with that. Batshuayi could be on his way to Chelsea, Chris. Interestingly, obviously there's headlines coming out about how Spurs missed out on him. No one seems to be talking about how Crystal Palace missed out on him. But he seems to be on his way towards Chelsea.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's had an interesting career rise from Standard to Marseille. I'm not fully convinced he's worth that kind of figure. I also think the striker market will be massively inflated this summer anyway, because there's maybe not that wealth of potential candidates to begin with. But I think, as you rightly say, no one's talking about the fact that Palace are missing out on him. But I give Palace credit for being incredibly ambitious with their target. Yes, their bid.
Well, it is sort of interesting, isn't it? It's almost like fake it till you make it. They sort of thought, well, you know, we might as well make the bids. Even if no one's coming here in the end, we're being included in those conversations. And I imagine that, you know, within Europe, when people see that, then they go, oh, they're now in that conversation as well.
No, exactly. That's the thing with the TV money being what it is. You're trying to use that to engineer what is another echelon up from what you usually buy. And I think Batshuayi represents that. But then also he's in the French market, which I think makes an easy transition from England in general. So
just not for pounds and euros anymore.
Yeah, up until 2 weeks ago, it seems. If it's actually been 2 weeks, but I have no idea how long
it's
actually
been. 2 weeks. I think it's been more like 5 or 6 days.
So, yeah, I'll be curious to see how he handles Chelsea, because it can be a difficult place for a striker to go.
Yeah. Crystal Palace have apparently bid, though, for Andros Townsend, 13 million, Chris.
Yeah, so he's got a release clause. That's what's facilitated this one. And everything that I've heard to this effect is that he will go. I don't think you can blame him too much. I sense that maybe part of this has been influenced by Roy Hodgson's departure ever so slightly, because there's a bit more of a guarantee of national team time under Roy Hodgson. But also, I think...
That went well.
Well, this is what you can say about Townsend. He came in, he did kind of what was expected of him, and I think performed very admirably in a side that was all but destined to go down from the minute he arrived anyway. And Newcastle will get, I think, pretty much what they paid in return for him anyway. So there's nothing to be too upset about. It looks like they're going to sign Matt Ritchie. That one's all but done now as well. So again, for all the talk of being upset, I don't think anyone should be that upset about it, really.
Mm. Are there any other headlines around? What have you seen? I've seen it's basically a lot of sort of fill pieces in between when games happen, really, isn't it?
Yeah, the one deal that has intrigued me, if I can use that phrase, is Jerome Sinclair to Watford.
Yeah, he's an interesting one, isn't it? He's a talented kid, I'll give him that. Very good striker.
Because I think that could be a really kind of interesting move, because he promises a lot, and you've had talks about him off air. I'm just curious to see what he does, because I always kind of admire when a team seems to fly a little bit left of centre on that and try and do something a bit different in the market.
Well, I mean, he's definitely been good. Definitely was good for Liverpool. I just think Liverpool didn't have space for him within the wage structure. And Liverpool essentially have lost another player there to essentially wage demands, really. And that is part of the problem with, I think, what Liverpool have done in recent years, which is to recruit from London. And I think a lot of people from that area probably look to move back south at some point or move to a more media-centric area. And, you know, I respect what Klopp says, which is, you know, we want to, you know, if someone wants to go, we want to build a club with people who want to be here, not with people who don't want to be here. And that, I agree. I think that's a very admirable approach. But at the same time, it means that you probably will miss out on some real talents. And I think Liverpool have got some great talent anyway, but I think Sinclair will be one of those.
Well, that's the thing. He's cost them $4 million, which is the tribunal kind of works out on a lot of different parameters. But the thing I'm finding now, I had a chat with a guy called Jake Cohen, who's a sports lawyer based in Manchester, originally from Boston. And we were talking about Chelsea's approach and this mountains of youngsters. And the way he broke it down made me kind of reassess the way I look at transfers entirely.
Why?
So if we use Sinclair as an example, so it's $4 million. I think he signed a 4-year deal.
Yep.
So your initial outlay is $1 million a year. Then his wages is what? Say 25 a week, something like that?
I think it may be a little bit more than that, actually, because I think Liverpool, maybe just a little bit more than that, but yeah, not much more, because Liverpool, I think Liverpool were going with 10, but I can't remember.
So for argument's sake, we'll say 40. That in itself is 160 a month. About 1.3, 1.4 a year.
Yeah, makes sense, yeah.
That means you're spending 2 million a year.
1.5.
Every year that you've got him. 1.5 for argument's sake.
Yeah.
Say you come to sell him in 2 years' time, I'd wager, assuming he hasn't forgotten how to play football, you can get about 2 million. So your actual loss at that point becomes about 1.5 a year. Your loss becomes about 1 million.
Well,
if he actually succeeds,
yeah, your investment becomes a million. Yeah.
Yeah, your investment is at that point £1 million that you've lost out on.
Yeah.
If he succeeds, he arguably becomes worth double, triple, quadruple, maybe even more that outlay.
Very arguably, you could sell someone like Jerome Sinclair for $10 million in a couple of years' time, A, because he's English, B, because he'll probably be on the fringe of a squad by that point, and C, because because he's probably one of those players that will mature like that.
Exactly, and for that reason, it makes such sense, and I found it a really interesting way to look at it. And to be honest, in general, my chat with Jake was an exceptionally interesting one, because he is someone who kind of openly admits he doesn't understand the minutiae of football as a game, but he does really get the financials. And then having spoken to him, he most definitely does. I'd be very curious to sit down and talk to him about the Hulk move that's just gone through.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating one, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, we all know what Svenigans wants, Svenigans gets. But that's a lot of fucking money for that guy.
It is. No, you're right. It is a huge amount of money. He is an exceptionally talented player. Mm-hmm. And I sense as well, while not justifying the fee in its entirety, I think he will likely sell a good amount of shirts. He is, of course, going back to Asia as well, because he played for Tokyo Verde very early in his career before he joined Porto.
Yes. Although, of course, I see what you're saying, but then that is that's very similar to almost saying, you know, he was in Portugal and then he moved to England. Maybe it's like suicide saying, you know, you're in Ukraine and then you move to England.
It was more a curiosity, because I remember watching him for Tokyo Verde and he was a flat track bully, I think at best is the way to put it. He also played for Kawasaki Frontale as well, so he is not completely alien to playing in Asian football and like the Asian Champions League, I would have thought.
And it's always a good excuse to get someone with your accent to say Kawasaki. So, hey, if that's the only reason to get you on the pod anyway. Excellent stuff. Barcelona obviously say they're going to put Neymar on a 5-year deal in the coming days. Chris, Alkmaar's Janssen apparently been subject to a Tottenham bid. Do you know a lot about him?
Yeah, so he is very young. Mm-hmm. I think the best way to look at his career is it's been a very sharp rise very quickly. Okay. So he's 22, which again, you can decide yourself if you consider that young for a player these days. And he was at Almere City, where he scored boatloads of goals in the second tier. And then he's come up to RZ this season and done pretty much the same thing. The only, I think, concern you have with him, it kind of falls back into a general concern about strikers in Dutch football in general, is it can be a league that is deceptive relative to talent. And in the games against Ajax and I think Feyenoord as well, he just wasn't really the most present. He wasn't influencing things, dictating things. And it goes back to that thing we talked about, flat track bullies. There is a small air of that about him and his goal record and him being that flat track bully. Spurs are a curious one, though, because they seem to be finally understanding how to actually identify young talent correctly and also develop it. So I will be curious to see if this one progresses. I think in relation just quickly to the Barcelona thing, I'm very interested to know where all their money is coming from, because they have also just signed Samuel Umtiti as well from Lyon.
Yes. I think we're all curious to know where that money is coming from. But we may find out very soon. In other places, through other avenues. I wonder why people are persecuting so many of their players for tax avoidance. Anyway, before we do move on, we preview Wales-Belgium real quick. In the next few days, we will talk about the Dnipro situation and just the overall league situation in Ukraine, which is fairly bizarre, but something that we've been discussing behind the scenes at TF3. Chris, Wales-Belgium next up. When I say bizarre, I mean tragic and terrible in football terms. Wales-Belgium in the next few days, today, essentially, is the next day. Preview this one for me. I mean, it's a team of potential Bales against a team of people surrounding Bale.
Yeah, that's the thing. The thing is, I know Bale said that every player in that Wales team knows what their job is. I get the feeling their job is much like the players on Bel Air Prep's basketball team. Good. Pass the ball to Will. Yeah. I admire a lot of what Wales represent. I just have this feeling, and partly it's because I poo-pooed them as dark horses for this tournament anyway, that the ride stops here. The one fly in the ointment of that theory is Mark Wilmots' inability to put Belgium in the best position to succeed, because again, he started De Bruyne at the best number 10 that Belgium have out wide for the tournament, and then he does learn from his mistakes. The problem is, in international football and knockout football, you can't really afford to make a mountain of mistakes.
Good point, yeah. And that is partly why there are certain people banned in this game. Vermaelen is obviously out on a suspension. I actually think he's the only one who's on suspension in this game. However, Ashley Williams dislocated his shoulder in the last game, and Vertonghen looks unlikely as well. Chris, of the two, Ashley Williams is probably going to be the bigger miss for Wales. And you probably say that he'll play for them if there's even an inkling that he can, right?
I think he'll push himself through if he can, but even then.
But Chris, he can't move his arm, is what the Savage said.
If he's limited physically, there becomes a point where, for all his talent, he is actually more of a burden than a blessing. Mm. And he becomes a target. You know, he becomes the member of the herd that they all try and attack because they know he's not physically fit. And
that's again, the worry if you're playing Belgium, isn't it?
It is. And you know, with Belgium having such an aerial presence, that will be, I think, a huge test for Wales. But again, they've made me look incredibly silly throughout this tournament, so I wouldn't be surprised if they went and did it again.
Yeah. the home nation that could go through in this round. Like they say, it is a team of individuals against a team in this one. The way that Wales will line up, I'm wondering if with Ashley Williams they could go through at the back, Chris.
They could. That would be a solid idea because they have some decent fullbacks that I think could play wing back. They're like Neil Taylor, Chris Gunter, Ben Davies. I think they've got those options. I think it does give them a good structure as well and a good stability. And on the flip side, from a defensive end, it will limit the potential of those wide players that I think Belgium have some real quality in. It's whether Coleman is willing to be adventurous, which sounds a bizarre way to characterise a five-man defence, but adventurous in the sense of it changes what he's done and what he's prepared them for.
Good point.
And in fairness, these two met in qualifying as well, so I would imagine he'll have a good firm grasp of what he's trying to achieve against this team and how to do their most damage. I remember watching the game in Wales between these two, and the last sort of 10-15 minutes really was Wales camped in their own half, just kicking any ball as far as they could when it came near them.
Good point. And we may see that again in this game. But obviously, things have worked well for Wales before, and people always reference their qualifying advantage over Belgium that they got. At least mentally, that might help them, even for the shortest amount of time. Chris, thank you very much for joining us tonight. It's been fantastic to have you. We will see you maybe tomorrow, maybe later in the week.
Definitely.
Cheers, man. Have a good one. People can go find you, Kay Hennage, on Twitter. K-H-E-N-E-A-G-E. And of course, he's writing on thefront3.com, three, the numeral three. He's a fantastic guy. He's a fantastic writer. And we will see you guys again soon with some more fantastic guys, less fantastic writers. Tomorrow. Until then, let us know on Twitter how you guys are doing at the front three. Your thoughts on the game are very much appreciated, and we will try and include them if you guys want us to. And we'll see you again real soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right here.